While Gary is going, he did his thing in Davis, I did my thing in Berkeley. Gary was making the distinction between scientific data that is not presenting a decidable truth. It was not detectable in the data. That's what they say in Davis. I was a student of Alfred Tarski in Berkeley, where we went one step further to take it from detectability in the data to decidability of the truth. And Catherine, no, she's also gone. Catherine asked two times the question, well, who decides it, or who comes up with the questions? What is decidable or not? And in particular, who comes up with the questions that are either constrained by, well, you cannot ask the questions if you're a teacher because you're not the department chairman and you're not responsible to the parent organization. Or you can do, as she says, in the case of Teresa, she finds the kind of response that is deep enough and modern enough to answer the question, is it detectable in science, and is it decidable? Is it decidable? So 24% of her database is female and modern. 50% of the database she presented is not modern in the sense, as I would say, as an economist, an economics teacher, and a bioinformatics teacher, it is not sufficiently deep to keep America from slipping behind. There are 38 million students out there that have student loans, a trillion or more. And the question is, how good is that education? Is it enough education to keep up competitive? If you go up and down in Silicon Valley, you see 73% of the ones that have the modern jobs are not WASP. So this question of detectability and decidability of truth, which hangs over science and over religion, is very important, and we see it in each and every of the good presentations here. That is the key issue. And my claim is, I'm expecting a paradigm shift in Christian education regarding science, technology, education, arts, and mathematics. And while most of us here are trained at looking at this theology, natural science conflict from the science point of view, I'm taking it from the tail end of STEM, science, technology, mathematics. Because what Gary's proper point was is it becomes visible. The formerly invisible truth becomes visible with modern tools. Yeah, and then some of that visibility will lead to an explanation that is naturalist, so the design question can be answered sufficiently with that kind of natural science explanation, and others can't. So we are right schmuck back into the borderline issue between what is representable by natural concept and what is not. And it's an overlapping again and again of the natural and the supernatural. The practical, the claim which I'm having here is this. Decidability We are here in a room which, if you see it, look at the angles, you can see that this building, the building we are in, is a 6 simplex. It's a picture, the architecture is 6 points and 6 connections of it. This is a simplistic manifold of possibilities. And if you subdivide it, you can rightly see it here. This is the graphic of the building, and this is the graphic of where we are in. You see, there is not much of a choice how to cut the room we are in if the macro pattern is a 6-corner thing. Now you can vary this. And if you are over in the dorm there by the Howard Auditorium, you find it is a 5-corner animal. The structure is 5 corners. And the roof, the nonlinear roof, is composed by 6-corner things. So the architects of this campus, they knew you can translate some of the principles of superposition of linear and nonlinear things. For example, in architectural designs, nothing about it is supernatural, but the composition, Perry called, the structure behind that, the mathematical structure, it's as old as music or mathematics. If you're joining, you say it's from the beginning. And if I've heard that over lunch, others say, or is it invented yesteryear? Some of the mathematics, that was Gary's point, has been invented. No, it has been discovered recently. But of course, it's there from the beginning. You debate that, whether the mathematics is from the beginning, but the point is a good number of points in the Bible where we have data. For example, we have data on Genesis chapter 1, the Genesis time frame. If you look at the structure of it, the 6 and the 7, is precisely the same architectural design as this one is. It's 6 corners and 6 lines dividing it. And over and above is a crossing thing, because that's how it's integrated non-linearly, and you can depict it. Not only that, give me a flip chart and I go over there and I write it down mathematically. I can write down the formula I know. Well, I don't know where I learned the formula, but I know one thing. That formula is not necessary to represent the truth in it. You can test that truth, either by measuring the thing or by simply seeing that this is consistent with a concept that represents already 7 and 6. And across the various chapters of the Old Testament, from Noah and on, and from Esther, that was our presentation here from Esther, there's the Esther star, you can see case after case after case after case where there's a pattern that has a meaning that extends beyond the pattern, therefore it's an epipattern. And not only that, if you take the math behind it, you can test it and you can prove that it is not random. Which means we are here on a Sunday afternoon spending a wonderful time together in defense against the null hypothesis that all that Christian message and all that Christian meaning is the null hypothesis of the skeptics and the atheists. They say it's null and void. And they say that in the scientific language, which simply means it's just random words. Right? That's precisely what it is in the view of the skeptics. Thomas said, I don't believe it. Because what the women were telling us is unbelievable. It's random words. That's what it means, what it boils down to. And we are standing here and saying, we know knowledge. Some of this knowledge has not been detectable in the data yesteryear, but now it's detectable. And not only that, some of that knowledge is decidable, and it is decidable in a way how you reject a null hypothesis. What's going on here is the battle is Teresa didn't know how to reject the null hypothesis. And that fellow from physics, he was chicken to do it. Because he would be fired by the chairman. Because the chairman would be fired by the parents' organization if he would not speak the kind of ambivalent language that he did. Right? We know the politics behind the personalities that go into these jobs, because that's the cultural background. And against that cultural background, Gary and I and others say, hey, we now have concepts that allow us with scientific precision not to claim the existence of God. That's not the issue. The issue is we now can reject the null hypothesis. That's a game changer. That is a game changer. And you know who likes it? My students love it. They love it not because I can claim the truth of it. Oh, I prepared a wonderful paper and it shows the non-linearity of it. What I spell it because it's Sunday afternoon. It's all there. If you want to have it, I'll give it to you. What it says is simply, at the same time, while this kind of applied mathematics to pictures, no, to a truth that is depictable, Gary said it's visible. It's not words, it's logos. It is audible, hearable, tasteable, visible. And not only that, the kids like it because it's shareable. You know how they share it? This way. And whom do they share it with? Their friends. And why it is worth sharing? Because it's a message which is important when they talk behind the back of the teacher. Isn't it? The teachers, four of these males, or was it three and one? Yeah. That's the way they talk behind the back of the teachers. Behind your back, behind my back. Because they are saying, oh, he is chicken and he is ambivalent and it's a floppy anyway. That's the way they talk. But the gist of it is, the gist for us as scientists, all of a sudden we have more tools to reject some of these claims, null hypotheses. And not only that, the level of confidence and the level of significance, the validity and the reliability of these tests is a class better than it was a generation ago. It's a game changer. Who will love it? The youngsters. So if this ASA group where we are is want to make a campaign how to increase the number of youngsters in our group, that's the way. Simply by presenting facts that are testable to
to these kids, and they share it.
And not only that.
Well, I have it in my... It's non-linear stuff. It's visible. It's well known. It has history and tradition. That's not new stuff. That's well known. But it takes two generations to pass it on from teacher to student, who becomes teacher, right? So your database shows exactly that it takes in the 21st century just as long as it took Darwin's students in the 19th century to go from truth that is testable to truth that is being tested. Therefore, it's a game changer. And my expectation is it will change the landscape of learning and teaching pretty soon. And you know where it will happen? If it doesn't happen here in the Midwest? If you see that 35% of the students in the Bay Area, they are Chinese, Indians, and others that are obviously not born there, they are students. They are coming from countries with hundreds and hundreds of millions of learners. And as you can see, Alibaba is now bigger than the mother company that financed it. And Facebook is now worth more than Walmart. Have you seen that? The market capitalization of Facebook is now bigger than that of Walmart. Now, who are the customers? And now multiply that with the number of billions living in China and India and in these marketplaces, and you know how fast it can go when it spreads, when this application of that kind of technology is loaded with Christian content, or with religious content, or with spiritual progress, which these kids think it's worthwhile to talk about. Fast. That can happen very fast. Faster than it would go and spread in the past. Thank you for your attention. It was a pleasure being with you on a Sunday afternoon.
Questions, or
oh, yeah.
Last if you would, if you've got a question, come on, come on. We got it.
Come ask me one from physics, theoretical physics.
I love them. Non-linearity in chaos, right? Where's the turbulence when there's a game changer?
Any specific things you were pointing at about the new evidence? What? Evolutionary, was it biology or physics or what were you?
Pardon me?
Was it specific, the new data, was there sort of specific ones that you were thinking about? Or?
Yeah, okay. See, I'm not discovering this in the context of theology, although I'm a process theology. I come from finance, and we have nonlinear finance with turbulence in there. Lots of turbulence and uncertainty that comes because people error. They invest in false negatives, and they can't distinguish between a positive true and a negative, and all that. Turbulence in the brains, and not only in, say, your brain and my brain, but amongst us. So it's a collective. As Esther has said, it's a collective defect. And the mathematics shows that can be cured fast. And I'm coming from innovation financing, and sometimes it's going down fast, and sometimes it's going up fast. Like the stock market goes up
if you have Google and Yahoo and LinkedIn and a couple of those, then it, the value creeps up 10 times fast. So the speed of it and the jerking behavior in the third order derivative and the Jones in the fourth order derivative, it's all testable. It's all testable. It's right there. And there are enough people who find that interesting if they can visualize it, right? I mean, if you go into your classroom, I suspect it happening like in other classrooms where physics is, it takes you 10 hours to explain jerk. Here, I tell you, I show you the graphics. Here, it's a derivative of a Möbius contour. It takes me 10 seconds to do it. So the probability of this new knowledge, which Gary, for example, has shown us, and the interpretation of it, Esther has shown us this morning, that can spread fast.
Okay. Any final questions? Well, if not, this time, why don't we give a hand of applause for all the speakers? Go out and get ourselves something to drink.